When my boyfriend and I were both still in college, we rented out an Airbnb in Las Vegas during the summer. It was a modest two-bedroom, one-bathroom house right by the Vegas Strip, making everything in walking distance. This one summer, just wanting to get away from life and away from it all, we booked the Airbnb wanting to have a nice time. The owner was nice, but was very strict on having people over. We assured him we didn't know anyone in Vegas and would honor his wishes. Our third night there, we had just gotten back from the casino after gambling some of our spending money. We've never been to Vegas, so it was okay to gamble at least once. A few hours after we got back to the Airbnb, I was feeling a little ill, so we decided to sleep in separate bedrooms to avoid the spread. However, the bed frame in the other bedroom was broken, so we agreed that I would sleep on the bed while my boyfriend slept on the floor with a simple blanket. I felt bad in the moment, but he didn't mind it though, and we fell asleep shortly after. A few hours go by when I was suddenly awoke to my boyfriend nudging me. He was standing over the bed, trying to wake me up. I take a look at my phone and ask him in an annoyed tone what was so important at 4 a.m. There was a short pause before he said he was hungry and that we should go down to the gas station for a snack. I told him that if he was hungry that he could go himself and to let me sleep. This doesn't satisfy him though. He didn't want to go alone and insisted I go with him. This was weird as I had never seen him act like this before. There was something about his tone that was just off-putting. At least, that was my logic. After several attempts of getting me to come with him, I finally obliged and put on my sandals. We walk outside of the house and start heading towards the street when my boyfriend says, "Babe, I'm not actually hungry. I woke up in the middle of the night and looked under your bed. There's someone sleeping there." My heart sank as he said this, and I repeatedly asked him questions to make sure he wasn't playing some sick joke. By some stupid luck, the person didn't see my boyfriend as they were facing the other way. We called the police and lo and behold, they came out of the Airbnb with a homeless looking man in handcuffs. However, he didn't try to get away and sort of just let the police arrest him. Looking back, it seemed as if he were wasted or on drugs. We still aren't sure how the man managed to sneak in the house as the owner claims he had security cameras and would have definitely seen him. This makes us believe that this man had been inside the house for quite some time, even before us. And that's a very scary thing to think. It was the summer of 2016, and my friends and I were taking a road trip down to Miami for Ultra. Ultra is a widely popular music festival around the world that was hosted once a year with many popular celebrities. If you're a big music fan, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, my friends that I had gone with decided to get an Airbnb to stay in, as that would be the cheaper option than a hotel, and was well within our budget. I've heard a lot of bizarre and creepy experiences when renting Airbnbs, but at the time we really didn't think much of it. We'd be at the event for the weekend, which meant that we'd also be renting the Airbnb for the whole time. It wasn't a huge house or anything, just the appropriate size for a group of friends. This had been a weekend we've all been looking forward to for about a year now, so we made the most of it. Fast forward to the day of the festival, we're all partying, having a good time, when I take notice of a man staring intently at my friend. This was common, as it's a large event with many people, so it was no surprise there were creeps. However, my friend didn't feel threatened or uncomfortable. She's had several encounters of people looking at her like this, and she sort of just let it go, as it was normal to her. We all sort of dismiss it as some harmless druggie and continue on with our night. The venue was huge with a lot of people, I'd say about 5,000, and after a night of drinking and dancing, we all had went home. It's around 1 a.m. and we're all starting to go to bed so we could get up early the next day. However, I have always had trouble sleeping throughout my life. I've always had an innate fear of the night, ever since I was a child, and for whatever reason, I guess it stuck with me through adulthood. I wasn't so much afraid of what lied in the dark, but rather the dark itself. I always saw it as some silly fear, but this night definitely confirmed my fears. At this point, it's about 2 a.m. and everyone was asleep but me. After constantly rolling around in bed, I finally got some shut-eye, when I awoke to my friend shaking me. In my groggy state, I ask her what she wanted when she says,
"Do you not hear that? Someone's walking around outside."
Now, my bed is right beside the back door, and after rubbing my eyes, I finally heard it. Someone was definitely out there, and it sure as hell wasn't any of us. At first, I would have assumed it was the owner of the home just checking on things. However, why would he be doing that in the middle of the night without us knowing? I get up from my bed and peek outside the window, only to see no one there. I knew my mind definitely wasn't playing tricks on me, as I know what I heard. As I get out of bed to go see who it was, I then hear the scream of one of my other friends from another room. Upon rushing into her room, I opened the door and was greeted to a man who I could only recognize as the same man from the concert. The minute he saw me, he basically jumped outside the already open window and ran off into the night. Our two male friends had gone after him, but had given up after they couldn't find him. Police were involved, but there was nothing much they could do other than conducting a police report. We had contacted the actual owner of the house, who was thankfully very understanding and refunded our stay. Since we don't live in Miami, we had to end our trip short and head back home, which was an 8-hour drive. This was many years ago, and my friend has since gotten therapy because of this. She's obviously moved on from it now, but she still talks about it with people till this day. I still mourn over the fact that my friend could have been killed that night if she hadn't woken up. I still have no idea as to how that man from the show managed to find us. My only guess was that he simply followed us, but kept his distance while doing so. I've always wondered about what he might have done had I not gone into the room in time. We've never been back to Miami since, and we also don't rent Airbnbs anymore. This world is full of dangerous and evil people who actually want to cause harm to others. If you ever plan on renting Airbnbs, please do so carefully. Make sure all of the doors and windows are locked at night. You never know who might be lurking.
My brothers, my partner, my best friend and I all recently took a trip to Kansas City to go to the Orville Peck concert. We waited until the sort of last minute to reserve an Airbnb because we weren't all 100% sure who was all going. Nonetheless, we found one just outside of Kansas City in a suburb called Grandview at a pretty reasonable rate. The host's overall rating was good, and we didn't see anything out of the ordinary when reading the first few reviews, so we thought we had gotten a fairly good deal. We arrive in Grandview a little after 3 p.m., and our Airbnb was the bottom floor of the owner's home. As we pulled up to the house, we noticed quite a bit of religious signs and statues on the lawn. Now don't get me wrong, I don't have an issue with people believing in whatever they believe in, so long as it doesn't infringe upon other people's rights. But here we are, a group of very visibly queer folks about to attend a gay country concert, blindly walking into someone's home that we'd be staying in for the next 2 nights. We decided there was nothing to be worried about. And after all, we technically were in the Bible Belt, so we shouldn't be surprised that we're staying in the home of someone who is religious. My brother and partner called the host and met her at the door of our guest suite. She showed them around while the rest of us got our suitcases unloaded. When they came back to meet us, they said that she was super nice. And again, our minds were eased. We decided to hang out, order food, and rest a little before we headed off for the concert that night. Our comfort did not last long, though. While we were getting our suitcases unpacked, laying around in one of the bedrooms of our guest suite, my youngest brother was casually looking through the drawers of the dressers and side tables, as anyone would do. Most of what he found was normal. Extra bed sheets, pens, paper tablets, nothing really out of the ordinary. That is, until he came across something that would completely change our outlook on the trip itself. Inside the drawer was a Bible, not super weird considering where we were staying, but he was flipping through the pages of it. A small tinfoil packet fell out. Now, for those of you who don't know anything about drugs or what they look like, what fell out of that Bible rhymes with Smack Star Sarawin. That's right, not even 30 minutes into our stay, my youngest brother found hard drugs in the folds of a Bible. At this point, we weren't really sure what to do. We did not want to tell the host, and we most certainly did not want to call the cops. We contemplated about taking the packet and throwing it away at some random gas station. But ultimately, we decided to put it back where we found it and act like none of us had seen it. We got our food and started to get ready for the concert. While the rest of us got ready, my partner, who was not going to the concert, started reading through the household handbook. Everything seemed pretty standard except a few lines that read something like, "We will respect your privacy so long as you respect ours. We can be available as you need us to be. And if you're interested in speaking about the ministries of God, feel free to reach out." Again, I have nothing against people following the religions that they do, but that seemed like an awfully out of place thing to put in your house rules handbook for your guest suite. There were a few more books lying around that stuck out a little off base with titles like Teaching Men to Comprehend How Women Think and How Women Should Think. We ignored these things for the most part. Aside from my partner who is now freaked out about being left alone at the suite while the rest of us went off to the concert, I told him it was just some Bible thumping and that he really didn't have anything to worry about. He's a worrywart though, so as soon as we left, he locked himself in the bedroom and started looking a little more into the books that we had found. He came to the realization that the books were associated with a group called International House of Prayer, a prominent religious cult founded in Kansas City, a majority of whose members live in the Grandview suburb, where we were staying. I could write a whole separate post about the beliefs of those members, but essentially, they are an evangelical Christian group that has a functioning 24/7 prayer room that has been going non-stop since 1999. It's all too much to go over here. We got back from the concert really late, and not to mention a couple of us were still heavily intoxicated from drinking. So he didn't mention much about it that night, but he was very quick to tell us about it the next morning. At this point, we thought, okay, these people are part of some weird church, whatever, it's fine. That explained some of the weird rules and books we had found. We left for the day to go hang out around the city. And when we got back to rest, my friend and partner started doing some more reading on the group. That is when they found out that we were actually staying in one of the prominent leaders' houses. We figured this out by cross-referencing the names of our hosts with the names of important members on the International House of Prayer University website. After this, we started to snoop a little more in our suite. We found large barrels of dried food, a jug of some liquid that we later found out is what they drink while they fast, and lots more teaching materials. Basically, it seemed like they were completely prepared for some sort of end times rapture. Eventually, we did go back and read more thoroughly through some of the reviews, and found a few that would have set off some red flags. For example, one of the reviews stated how the male owner brought out a gun in front of the people who were staying there. Yikes. Not to mention, if there was even a hint of a negative review left, the host would leave a snarky reply. Needless to say, we spent as much of our time as possible away from that Airbnb as we could for the remainder of our trip. And although we were never in any direct danger, we did feel very uncomfortable throughout the entire thing. I've gotten a lot of questions about the heroin. First off, I know that it doesn't come back up in our story, but ultimately, it was the catalyst to all the other weird stuff that we slowly uncovered. And I knew it was heroin because I've seen it before. I have family and friends that have used it. And it is also one of the first things to come up if you Google drugs in foil packet. I do not know if it was left there by a previous guest or if it was the owner's. Either way, finding it in a Bible within our first hour of being there was off-putting to say the very least. after reading a few posts on here. I've decided to add one of the creepier, still unexplained events that happened to me and a group of friends within the past 5 years. Thinking back on it, I still get this unnerved bad feeling that sort of lingers. Anyway, here goes. A group of friends and myself rented out a place on the week just for a fun-filled drunken weekend. We were all in our young to mid-20s, and it was supposed to be just for a big party. For the most part, that's exactly what it was. The Friday night and Saturday morning, we pretty much went all out, having a blast on the water, just doing fun, stupid stuff. Well, naturally, when Saturday afternoon rolled around, we were all so dead from going all out, we decided it would just be a night of no drinking, maybe a little weed smoking, and just have a chill evening and night. And that's exactly what it was, very relaxed. So 9 p.m. rolls around, and about 8 of us were inside the house and 5 outside the house. It was a two-story house with a second-story deck slash back porch, and it was surrounded by the woods, and then down through the woods, you would hit the lake. I'll mention that we had already experienced some weird vibes from the locals when we first arrived, mostly just backcountry old-timers that I assumed were leering and irritated because we were a bunch of college-age kids looking to have a good time. But the town and the lake were so large, it's not like anyone knew where we were staying. Anyways, 3 of my friends were upstairs on the back porch, and my other friend and I were downstairs outside, just talking a little on this old table near the woods. I mean, it was otherwise just a really nice night. My friend and I were just getting lost in conversation, and all of a sudden, there was this weird feeling that encompassed us. Like an unnerving physical experience that came from the woods down behind us. It was so strong, we both kind of just quieted down, and then out of nowhere, this loud chanting abruptly came from the woods. I have no idea how far away it was because of the way the lake is set up. I'm pretty sure the voices carried up through the forest, though. It sounded like a cult chanting away, and all the voices were male. I mean, they were loud and perfectly in sync. I think we were frozen for all about 20 seconds before I couldn't contain myself anymore and darted towards the house with her following behind. It's hard to describe and I don't know how to explain the feeling that came with that chanting, but it was definitely evil. Like something just so powerfully uninviting. I was shaking by the time we got up to the second story and ran out onto the balcony with our other 3 friends, one of them being my brother. By the time we got up there, the chanting was gone, and I naturally asked, "Did you guys hear that?" in the most shaky, freaked out voice. They all had heard it too. And not just seconds later, the chanting began again. So the 5 of us are out there peering into the forest, listening to the chanting that would sometimes sound far away and then sound relatively close. All male voices in the weirdest language, or I don't even know what it was. Sounded like some strange extreme church. Then following the chanting, a loud bang, like someone hit a huge metal object sounded. And then, the worst part came. A man wailing, like in extreme pain wailing. All of my hair was up. It was the freakiest experience ever. My brother and I were staring at one another in a mixture of scared, excitement, and horror. The wailing stopped. And then it was back to the chanting, which eventually died out. I was so freaked out by it that I wanted to call the cops, because whoever was screaming had definitely been in a lot of pain. And that mixed with the weird chanting just made me immediately think of some terrible sacrifice going on. One friend tried to say it had to be some drunk guys just messing around, singing, and being weird. But no way was that coming from some drunk guys. They were perfectly in sync. Then the bang, then the wail of pain. And then, all that weird tension and energy was just gone. Nope. I didn't call the cops, and I wish I would've. But honestly, the forest was so large, and since the lake house was up looking down at the woods in the lake, it could have been anywhere. It definitely wasn't in our close proximity, but close enough to hear all of it that perfectly. We all went inside and got some of the others, but by the time they came out, the chanting had stopped. Someone wanted to go out and explore and find where the sound had been coming from, but obviously that was a stupid idea. After that, I was so ready to go home. I can't explain the relief of driving away from there the next morning. Even now, it gives me the worst feeling ever, Whatever that was, it felt so wrong and so evil. I will never forget it. I can only imagine that it was some kind of weird cult stuff. A story on here reminded me of the time some friends and I had stayed in what turned out to be the third most shadiest hotel in Las Vegas, which for Las Vegas is definitely saying something. I also managed to inadvertently traumatize the entirety of my company. As I recounted, what I considered to be just an amusing childhood story. The hotel itself was a bit of a nightmare, as everything was bolted down and none of the doors locked. But I digress. The story itself is about my family's run-in with Satanists on a trip to upstate New York. Though, the growing expressions of disbelief and horror on my companions' faces assured me that the story was not, as I had previously considered, funny per se. In any case, what follows is completely true, and everyone present swears by this narrative. When I was 5 years of age, we took a road trip to upstate New York to see my grandmother on my father's side, as well as to tour around the countryside a little bit. There we were, in rural upstate, away from the region in which my grandmother actually lives, and we were planning on staying in a bed and breakfast my father had booked ahead of time. It had been an unexpectedly long drive due to weather complications, and when we found the B&B in question, we were all quite tired. We went up to the door to check in, and a woman missing her two front teeth on both jaws answered. She invited us in, but warned us that they didn't have a room for the night. They were booked solid. My father protested that he had made arrangements in advance, but she said she knew another hotel that had vacancy just up the way, and she would give them a call, and she assured him that they would offer the same rates. But first, she insisted on showing my parents around, as her husband was an artist and she wanted to show them his studio and his quote-unquote famous artwork. We were all invited in, but after seeing the first few pieces of naked women missing their front teeth, bound, or being tortured in various ways, my parents opted to leave the kids outside with Grandma. Apparently, most of the rooms were full to the ceiling with similarly foreboding images of dead or dying people, with the occasional sculpture of menacing animals. My parents were a bit creeped out, but just figured these people were a little eccentric, and they had dodged a bullet by ending up somewhere else. We all waited out back while the woman called her friend, beside a pit containing what could have been nothing other than an altar, covered with pentagrams. My mother mentioned that it seemed strange that not only had they not met the husband, who was supposedly there somewhere, having toured the entire house, but there hadn't been a single sign of life or a piece of luggage suggesting that anyone else was actually staying in any of these guest rooms in this supposedly fully booked B&B. A side note that's probably not worth mentioning, but I found strange when my mother brought it up while telling me the story later, was that we stopped by a park to stretch our legs at some point before proceeding to the next place. A storm was closing in on us, and my parents wanted to be sure we had zero energy upon arrival. While in this park, my mother claimed that one of us found and brought to her a small necklace with a pendant on it. The pendant itself was a pentagram on one side with a Third Reich symbol on the other. My mother took it away and put it inside her purse. We arrived at the next bed and breakfast to be greeted by a different woman, also suspiciously missing her two front teeth, upper and lower. It was about this time that my grandmother mentioned that she had read a lot of articles recently about tourists being killed by some cult of Satanists or some such in this area. Great. She tended to tell a lot of tall tales, so I think my parents kind of rolled their eyes and dismissed it, but they made a point to mention it later. The storm was now upon us, and we were all exhausted, and there was nowhere else to stay that we could find anywhere near there. My dad decided we would make do with whatever they had to offer. What they had to offer was a slightly renovated barn. During the bustle of moving our luggage in, the woman kept inviting my brother and I into the house, saying she had some sweets, and wouldn't we like to meet her kitties? She made it clear, however, that my parents were not welcome into the house because it was too messy, and she would be embarrassed. We were then herded away into the barn and told not to talk to the lady. Once inside, my father, who was by this time a bit creeped out, went about checking the beds and securing the one-room barn unit. The windows had no coverings whatsoever, and the doors had no locks. We placed pillows from the couches in the window frames, and my dad grabbed a dresser against one wall to block the door. When he went to move the dresser, he discovered it was on wheels, which were completely silent. He also noticed that the wall behind it moved a little when he shifted the dresser. When he scrutinized the wall, he found a seam. He pushed on the wall and it gave way, two invisible doors opening outwards into the night. And just outside was a dark-colored van which had been backed up to the opening. Livid, my dad went about rearranging all the furniture in the room, stacking the heaviest against the outward swinging doors, and moving the mobile dresser with various loud objects behind it against the main door. When he had completed this, we all started to settle down. This was around 11 p.m. The woman brought us freshly baked blueberry muffins. Now, as I mentioned before, I don't remember much of this trip, but this is one element I have a vivid recollection of. With the inclement weather and the rush to find a place to stay, complemented by the lack of restaurants in the area, we hadn't had what one might consider a proper meal. When you're 5, dinner is very important. The muffins were fresh baked and smelled heavenly, and I wanted one more than anything else in the world. However, presuming, and probably correctly, that they were poisoned or something was seriously wrong about them, since this entire thing was beginning to feel like a horror movie, my mother absolutely forbid us from even going near them. She put them on a high shelf and sent us to bed. I was so angry. I went to bed hungry and irritable. Only two things happened that night that I can recall. My parents slept very lightly, when at all, as you can imagine. They claimed they kept hearing talking outside. My sister woke all of us up with a blood-curdling scream around 1 a.m. for reasons unknown. She was usually a very quiet baby. When my parents got up and milled about for an hour trying to get her back to bed, my mom noticed something on the wall as she was walking her around and called my father over. What I would later learn was the picture hanging to one side of that door that during the daylight seemed to be logs in a recently extinguished fire pit in a tranquil forest scene, but by night was unmistakably burning corpses with a hooded smoky figure looming over them. We got up the next morning, packed up early, and waited for the lady to get up so we could pay and leave. While my parents were packing the bags, the woman came around back and gave my brother and I small wooden cats carved into the form of napkin holders, each a different color, and she had written little notes on. As my father was paying after loading us into the car, my mom began kicking gravel around the dirt absentmindedly. The woman came over to say goodbye and waved to us with her gapped grin, and my mother noticed that she was trying to discreetly recover the tiles that she was uncovered under the gravel. Before driving off, my mother got back out of the car and uncovered one of the tiles, and she claimed it was the same pentagram with the Third Reich symbol within it that she had seen a similar version of in that park, prompting her to notice, as we drove away, that the necklace was no longer in her purse. The likelihood of it simply falling out of the purse pocket she had placed it in was, as she put it, quite unlikely. People listening to this story seemed appalled at the fact that I still have that little wooden cat that the nice lady had given me, sitting in my bedroom. I know this all sounds very strange, but I can only assure you that it matches well with my memory of the events. And all the adults who were there tell the same story. Personally, I'm glad it's just a weird story we look back on with confusion, and that nothing stranger actually happened that night. Update. According to my mom, whom I spoke with today, it was near Millbrook, and one was a farm and the other was an old mill. I actually found the website for the B&B. It's still running, but with different owners. I don't know that I should post a link, however. They seemed like nice people who have improved it quite a lot.